Welcome to Plan Your Estate Radio with your host, San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman. Bob's been practicing law for over 40 years and is certified by the State Bar of California as a legal specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. Bob is here to help you set your house in order with valuable insights you can use today to prepare a better tomorrow for your loved ones. And now, your host for Plan Your Estate Radio, Attorney Bob Bergman.
Well, good afternoon, Bay Area. Bob Bergman here, broadcasting from my office in San Jose, California, in the Cambrian Park neighborhood, if you're familiar with that. Fortunately, I'm literally right across the street from a fire station, so if there's ever any problem in my building, they can literally just hook up and walk the hoses right across the street. Really kind of good to know that I have a fire station nearby. Now, I'm still battling that cough that I've had for the last couple of weeks. I'm soliciting right now, if you have your favorite remedy for treating a recurring cough that uses all natural ingredients, please feel free to email it to me at radio, R-A-D-I-O, at lawbob, L-A-W-B-O-B.com. I'll be gratefully accepting any submissions you may have for that, because I'm getting tired of having coughing jags just kind of come on me with no warning at all, which might happen during this show today. So if my, see, there's a little one right there. So we might want to put the 3-second dump on Miles, just in case I have a big coughing fit. You can block that out for me. Thank you. Okay, so we're all set to go. If I have a big coughing jag, he'll block it all out so that I don't blow out everybody's eardrums as we go here. Now, I've talked about a lot of things in the last few weeks. Today, I'm going to continue with my usual, but let me start first by reminding everybody that I do have on-demand webinars that can be accessed through my website at lawbob.com, L-A-W-B-O-B.com. One is for those who have minor children, called Estate Planning for Busy Parents. And then I have two other ones that are both titled the Living Trust Seminar, or webinar, rather. And one is just generally the Living Trust webinar, and that's aimed more at married couples. And then there is the Living Trust webinar for individuals, which is aimed at those who are unmarried, widowed, divorced, or just in an unmarried couple partnership, and also registered domestic partners. And then also, if you are married, but you have separate property that you want to do separate planning for from your marriage, this webinar will be useful for you as well. I find that they are a really good introduction to both estate planning and also my process for estate planning, and then my fee structure, which is based primarily on the complexity of planning that someone has selected, and then the opportunity to book a preliminary planning session with me to discuss what is the most appropriate level of planning for you and your family. The good news is that these are available 24 hours a day, and they can be accessed from any web browser. You can watch them right online. You can watch them from your phone. I've done it myself before to make sure that it works properly. And they're just available all the time. And over time, I'm going to be adding more and more webinars. And I'm considering taking some of my webinars and breaking them up into smaller pieces that are more topics. And those will be able to be accessed directly through my website. I will probably put those pieces up on my YouTube channel so that people can watch them if they just want to learn about a specific topic, like what is probate and why do we want to avoid it? What is conservatorship and why do we want to avoid it? What are different planning options for married couples, and a description of each planning option and how we go about doing that? All those kinds of things, those are on my list of things to do this upcoming summer, is build out more educational options for people to learn more about estate planning and how it can benefit you and your family. You while you are alive and your family after you are gone. So, that having been said, let's go ahead and get the show rolling today. I'm going to do some questions and comments from around the state of California. And I'll start first with one out of Los Angeles, California. I think we've all heard of that place. And Los Angeles, California, we're going to talk about, someone says, since trusts are entities, does having individuals holding title under their personal names as trustee seem necessary? Well, let's talk about trusts as entities. Trusts are really not entities, not in the sense of a corporation, for example, which is an entity. An LLC, an S corporation, a C corporation are all entities, but trusts are really not entities. Trusts by themselves can't own anything. Trusts can only own assets through a named trustee, one or more trustees. So, for example, if someone transfers their house to the Jones Living Trust, without naming trustees, it raises a problem later on if someone needs to actually handle that property because there's nobody listed on the title that has the authority to transfer or deal with the property because it's just in the name of Jones Living Trust. If a trust was truly an entity, that would be sufficient. For example, IBM Corporation. IBM Corporation can own real estate, and anyone who's authorized by the corporation to transfer or deal with that property can actually sign on behalf of the corporation. It doesn't work that way with a trust, though. A trust has to have one or more trustees in order to have the authority to deal with the property that's in the trust. So that's the first problem right there. So is it necessary? I would say absolutely necessary because in the absence of a named trustee or trustees, you have no idea who is actually in charge of the trust. So that is something that I always do with the real estate that I handle. I do a lot of transfers of real estate as part of my work as an estate planning attorney. I estimate I've probably done a couple thousand deed transfers over the years, and it's just very, very important that that be done carefully so that we don't have problems later on when trying to deal with the property. Okay. All right. Out of Lincoln, California, someone raises this situation. Says, my dad died and left an irrevocable trust to my siblings and I. I'm a licensed real estate broker. Thought it'd be smart to refer the sale of the home to a realtor who would handle everything. In return, I would receive a 25% referral fee, as is common between licensed real estate professionals, and split the referral fee evenly, one-third each, between my two sisters and I. Obviously, everything would be disclosed as required by law. Unfortunately, my oldest sister, who's the named trustee, is telling me it's illegal. I don't understand why and wanted confirmation. I think it may be illegal because you're talking about splitting a real estate fee with two people who are not licensed real estate professionals. And I think that's what the sister is worried about, is that. Now, there's nothing to say that you can't have your sisters get more money out of the escrow when it sells, but you can't really split the fee in that way. Okay, we're ending the first segment of the show. When we come back, there'll be more Plan Your Estate Radio with your host, estate planning attorney Bob Bergman.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose estate planning attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
And welcome back to the second segment of the show today. I'm going to continue with more questions and comments from around the state of California. And if you're just tuning in for the first time, what I do is I read situations, legal situations that people are facing around the state, and then I comment on them, either by making observations, talking about legalities, talking about suggestions I might make to this person if they were in my office. And the hope is that over time, if you listen over time, you're going to hear things that come up that apply to you or another family member or a friend or someone else or someone at work. And they may actually get some insights and to go out and seek assistance from someone, whether it's me or some other attorney, that can actually assist them. So, out of Rockland, California, person asks, how long before a beneficiary receives full accounting and financial statements? And is asking for this information a contest of a will or trust? So, person said, I asked the trustee's attorney for a full accounting and financial records, and my brother, who is a beneficiary along with myself, got all upset and said I'm contesting the trust. Well, first of all, that's not true. If you're entitled to an accounting, by definition, you're not contesting anything. Now, isn't giving that information standard procedure? Yes. How long after the death of my dad does the information have to be provided? There's no specific time unless it's a trust and it says there's a specific time. In this case, this person said, it's been over a month now with his passing on March 21st of this year. Well, I'll tell you, that's not a long time at all in the world of doing accountings. The real question is, why do you want an accounting? Do you think that something's going on that you need to be aware of? What is it that's concerning you about that? But I will tell you that getting an accounting, depending on the complexity of an estate, it could take several weeks or even months to get a full accounting together in a form that is going to be acceptable to everybody. Okay, out of San Clemente, California. Are all bank accounts put in a living trust renamed to the trust? Person says, I have a separate account from an inheritance that my spouse does not have access to. In the event of a divorce, I'm concerned that this bank account would be considered community property rather than separate inheritance if it's included in our living trust. Well, the short answer is, you can set up a joint trust with your spouse and specify in the trust what assets, what assets are community property assets and what assets are separate property assets. That's the approach that I take with the plans that I do. If you're really concerned about having your spouse on as a co-trustee with you, with your separate account as part of the trust assets, you always have the option to keep it out of the trust or set up your own trust to own that separate inheritance and have it be completely, utterly separate from the joint trust you've done with your spouse. I do have some clients that have done that because they have significant assets and they want to separately plan for those assets so that there is not any confusion later on down the line. Okay, out of Riverside, California. My husband and I own our home, but it's my son and I that are on the title as joint tenants because I qualified for a favorable loan with my son. And since my husband is dealing with disability injuries and other legal issues, he thought it best to keep his name off the title. Now I'm preparing a living trust, but can I put the house into the trust if my son is on the title? Let's pause right there. You can put your half interest into your trust if your son is on the title, and that would sever or cancel the joint tenancy, and now you'd each own half of the property. Now, that could trigger a reassessment of the property taxes. That's something to consider there. This person said, I'm also afraid of removing him from the title and losing my good interest rate, but I'm also afraid the house will not pass to my husband and other children if I don't get this trust done. It sounds like you need to have a detailed conversation with your son and with your husband and get with an estate planning attorney to see how you can structure this so that you can actually protect this. Now, it's not going to affect the loan if your son goes off the title because you're on the title as an owner and you're still legally obligated to pay on that loan. So that shouldn't affect the loan at all. But there is, of course, the issue of maybe triggering a reassessment of 50% of the property taxes because of Proposition 19. There's no way to tell from this situation here whether they'd be affected by that, but it is something certainly to consider. Now, out of Butterfly, California, better known as Mariposa, California, says, my husband and I own a home. We have a joint savings account and joint stocks. Am I able to set up a living trust that gives my daughter my 50% of everything that is joint, including my half of the house when I pass, even if my husband is still living? I want to make sure that if I pass and he remarried, that all of my assets I worked hard for go to my daughter. I want her to basically take my place for my 50% portion of every asset that's joint. My husband says he wants to leave everything to her too, but if he remarried, he could change his mind. Well, you're absolutely right. Well, one of the ways to do this is, first of all, not have everything just jointly owned, but have it owned by a living trust that is both of you. The trust could provide that on your passing, your half of everything goes into a bypass trust or a B trust, a trust set up to take care of your spouse, but to go on to your daughter when your spouse dies. Or if your spouse agreed, he could agree that in the trust, on your death, half of everything goes directly to your daughter at that time. Now, whether or not your spouse would agree to that, I think is problematic because he wouldn't necessarily want to end up owning half of the house with your daughter. That could also trigger a reassessment of 50% of the house unless the daughter's living there as her residence. This is Proposition 19 rearing its ugly head. And it also means you might be leaving your spouse with insufficient assets to take care of himself or herself. So those are all considerations right there. So, we're at the mid-show break. When we come back for the second half of the show, there'll be more questions and comments from around the state of California. This is Attorney Bob Bergman, and I'll see you on the other side.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
Welcome back to the third segment of our show today. Out of Stockton, California, the question, does my dad need a will? My dad's been with the same live-in girlfriend for 35 to 40 years. The house is only in his name and I'm the only child. Will the house go to me or her or what happens? I told him to get a will because if she can, she'll take everything. Well, here's the deal. If Dad makes a will and leaves it to his live-in girlfriend, she'll get it. If Dad does no will at all and dies, then it will pass through the laws of intestacy or intestate succession. Intestate means no last will and testament. If someone dies testate, it means they had a will. If they die intestate, it means they didn't have a will. If Dad dies intestate, the law says it will pass to his spouse. He doesn't have one. Then it says it will pass to his heirs. That would be his children. Here's an only child. That means the house goes to the only child under intestacy. The live-in girlfriend, not being a spouse, and presumably not a registered domestic partner, which could change the analysis, if just a live-in girlfriend and nothing formal about the relationship, they've just been living together all these years, that live-in girlfriend does not have any inheritance rights under California law. So for this person, if they want to have the property go to them, they're probably better off not making any suggestions to Dad about doing a trust or a will or anything like that. Now, I know that sounds kind of harsh, but that's the reality of how the law works. Now, out of San Bernardino, California, how do I update trustee name after a name change? If I'm a trustee for a trust and I've legally changed my name completely, how do I update that on the recorded property title deeds? Do I need to file an affidavit of change of trustee with the recorder using my old ID? I'm not sure what they mean by old ID, as in old identification. No, you would file an affidavit of change of trustee that identifies I, John Smith, declare as follows. I am the same person as Harvey Jones, trustee of this trust. There is a change of trustee due to me changing my name to John Smith. I mean, it'd be basically spelling out in the affidavit why there's a name change. Usually name changes are because someone's incapacitated or they've died, or maybe they've resigned and someone else has taken over. You would just explain why there's a name change in there. You would file it under your new name with your new ID, and that would be to give notice to everybody out there that there's been a name change, and I don't go by that name anymore, whatever that name was. Okay. So, El Cerrito, California. My mother's property is in my sister's name. Long story. Should I go through what the lender wants to change it to my mother's name and then do a trust? Or can I directly change it from my sister's name to the trust with my mother as beneficiary, which is the final goal anyway? That's actually two completely different questions when you break it down. If it's going to be a trust that's your mother's trust, where she owns the property and is also the current beneficiary, then you change it to your mother's name and then to the trust. Noting, however, that that could trigger 100% reassessment of the property taxes under Proposition 19, depending on whether the sister lives in the house or not, and if it's the mother's residence. All these are things I don't know. But if the sister transfers it to a trust where the sister created a trust for the benefit of the mother as the beneficiary, then the sister could create an irrevocable trust or even a revocable trust that names the mother as the beneficiary for when the sister dies. So there's a lot of things that could be done here, but I think what's actually being asked is, how do we get the property into a trust where mom owns it, and she is the beneficiary of that trust, which is the first thing I talked about. Out of Sacramento. Let's see. No, I'm gonna skip that one. It's much too convoluted. Okay, my brother died with no will, no wife, no children, and he was left the bulk of my parents' estate. Now this will pass to me and my sister as his intestate heirs. My sister put in a petition to administer my brother's estate. Should I stop that? Can she minus me out of my inheritance with this control? Well, it sounds like you don't really trust your sister. That's the first thing I take away from this, because you're concerned about her minusing you out of your inheritance. As one of the heirs, if she is the administrator of your brother's estate, administrator because he had no will, she is charged with the responsibility for handling the administration of the estate, keeping you informed of everything, and ultimately the distribution of assets to you. So she has all kinds of legal obligations to you as well as to her. And if she were to take steps to minus you out of your inheritance, she has actually broken the law. And she could be in big trouble for doing something like that. It's called embezzlement. If she's in charge of the estate and she converts it to her own use, it's embezzlement. And that could have serious legal consequences for your sister. If you don't really trust your sister, you can always petition the court to be appointed the administrator yourself. You can have dueling petitions. And the court would likely consolidate your petitions in one hearing and then decide who's in charge. It may be if there's trust issues between the siblings, you might want to consider having a professional administrator appointed by the court to handle everything so that you're not dealing directly with each other and you're also not in the situation where one or the other of you is going to try and take advantage because you're not actually in charge. San Diego, California. This is an interesting one. Person says, I have a very long and convoluted situation transpiring between myself, my brother, and his three adult sons, my nephews. They're taking financial advantage of my very elderly and infirmed, mentally and physically, parents, under the guise of being caregivers. Okay, I'll say right there, if you really believe that to be the case, then go to Adult Protective Services in San Diego County and tell them your concerns and let them look into it. If your parents are being financially abused by your brother and his sons, then there needs to be something to do about that. You can't do anything yourself, but the authorities can. And I guess one of the things was, one of the nephews signed off as a witness to the grandparents' plural will and trust documents. Well, first of all, there wouldn't be witness to trust documents, at least not in California. They only do that in Florida, as far as I know. But acting as a witness to a will is permitted, but it's questionable. If there's an issue like this where it's questionable, it could make the will very easy to challenge because someone who has a beneficial interest or perhaps a beneficial interest in the outcome of the will is acting as a witness. It's not illegal, but it's not a good idea to do that. Okay, out of San Francisco, California. Can I only name a bank or third person other than my wife as my successor trustee, even though I'm married? Said I had some property and savings before I got married. No children. want to be able to sign not only my wife, but also my siblings, mom or brother, as successor trustees. My siblings don't reside in the U.S., and I'm not sure, can I have them as a trustee? So I was thinking if I can have a bank or entity as the trustee, and they can manage things based on my will. Is it possible? If your siblings are not in the U.S., and they're not U.S. citizens, and they're non-residents as well, they shouldn't be named as trustees. That creates all kinds of complications with the Internal Revenue Service, what's called a foreign trust. Having, though, a U.S. bank or licensed fiduciary could actually solve those issues for you. So that might very well be who you should consider to handle these things for you. Okay, we're coming up on the end of the third segment of the show today. When we come back, there'll be the final segment of our show. This is Attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your Estate Radio, and I'll see you on the other side of this last break.
Now, back to Plan Your Estate Radio with Attorney Bob Bergman.
Welcome back to the final segment of our show today. Got some interesting ones in this segment. First of all, out of Whittier, California. Specifically, a person says, I'm concerned about the legality of a trustee intentionally utilizing their own post office box as my designated address. This action effectively redirected all mail related to probate matters concerning my late mother, of whom I'm the eldest son. I wasn't aware of this until a year after probate was opened. Well, I'll tell you right now, that sounds, it says here, was the stepfather that did that. I would say this about that. When you file a petition for probate, whoever files the petition as the petitioner is signing under penalty of perjury that the information in the probate petition is true and correct. If the stepfather was handling the probate and put down the stepson's address as a post office box that was the stepfather's and not the stepson's, then that means the stepfather basically lied to the court, and it also means that the son never got any of the proper notices because they are being mailed, if they were mailed at all, they are being mailed to a P.O. box that he did not control, that was the stepfather or petitioner's P.O. box. This person needs to get legal counsel and needs to perhaps file a petition in the probate to have the stepfather removed as the administrator or executor of the mother's estate on the basis that he lied to the court. That's what I would likely do. Now, I don't handle things like that myself, but I think that if you talk to 100 estate planning attorneys about this, you'd get 100 of them saying the stepfather needs to be removed as the personal representative of the mother's estate, because it appears that he actively lied to the court and has concealed information from his stepson that the stepson was entitled to receive under the law. Out of Santa Cruz, California, I asked my mom about my grandparents' will some months after my grandma passed. Grandpa died years ago. I wanted to find out how much my inheritance amount might be. She told me I had nothing coming because everything had been rolled into a trust with her and her brother as the sole beneficiaries. She said they would both have to be dead before any of the grandchildren could access any of the assets. She told me that was just how things were done now. I sat in shocked silence. She's also selling the houses I grew up in and refuses to even discuss an arrangement to keep them in our family. The houses are in Santa Cruz and are worth close to $2 million combined. I quite literally grew up in my grandparents' house and would love to have that house in the family for generations to come. Instead, my mother wants to sell both in as-is condition, and again, the money goes to her and her brother, I will say parenthetically, in trust. Not directly to them, in trust for their benefit. What can I do about any of this? Nothing. I feel like she basically stole my inheritance. No, she didn't. The grandmother did something that's very common, which is to leave the property in trust for her children and ultimately on to her grandchildren. There's nothing unusual about that at all. It's very commonplace. Occasionally, a grandparent will leave something directly to grandchildren, but that's not as commonplace as you might think. So there's really nothing that this person can do. That the grandmother didn't do anything wrong. The mother and her brother, the uncle, they are the beneficiaries of a trust established by grandma for their benefit. So they have the right to, and presumably they're the trustees, so they have the right to handle the property in there, sell it, reinvest it, and they probably have some rights to withdraw funds over time, over their lifetime. Nothing unusual about that at all. And even though it's not what this grandchild would want to hear, it's the reality of just how those kinds of plans work. Out of Sacramento, California. Person says, I recently found out that my daughter asked the law firm she works for to obtain a copy of my will and trust from the attorney I use without my signature on the request letter. Is my attorney obligated to send them my information without my signature? Well, I will tell you this. If it's your will and trust and it's being held by an attorney at this firm, you're the only one authorized to release a copy of your will and trust to someone, and you have to specifically authorize or direct that to happen. If the attorney just gets a copy of the will and trust of mom and hands it over to the daughter without permission of the mother, that's a serious breach of fiduciary obligations of the attorney. It's a breach of confidence. It's the kind of thing that could get that attorney suspended from the practice of law or perhaps even disbarred from the practice of law. You just don't do something like that. Okay, well, that's it for now. Have fun, California. I'll be back in a couple of weeks. This is attorney Bob Bergman. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Plan Your Estate Radio with estate planning attorney Bob Bergman. For more information on today's program or to schedule a consultation, visit lawbob.com. L-A-W-B-O-B, lawbob.com. Or call his office in San Jose, 408-247-0444. That's 408-247-0444. And be sure to tune in next week for more Plan Your Estate Radio with attorney Bob Bergman.
Opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, staff, or management of this station and are for informational purposes only and should not be construed to be legal, financial, or tax advice. Seek appropriate legal advice regarding your particular situation. Attorney Bob Bergman does not offer any guarantees with regard to the outcome of your legal matter. Prior results in other cases do not guarantee a similar outcome in your case. All rights reserved.